First of all, I hope that all of you either had a good late breakfast or are planning an early big dinner, because we have you at the lunch hour, you know, which is really pretty nice of you to be here. So thank you for that. This study, when I was contacted by the folks, and it was all the partners as well as Liza, about doing the study, I said, oh, come on, what's new under the sun about incentives or accreditation? Study was done on this in 2000, it was published in 2009, I think the data was 2008, by the University of North Carolina. What's new? And I was told correctly, things are new. One, FAB's real. It's actually happening. People are applying. Two, all this nippy money from CDC has been going out, and it's created a whole new dynamic in the public health system. And as I found, they were absolutely right. It ended up being a really fun study and something I was very, very pleased to work with. So the question, the context, so what stands in the way of volunteer accreditation? A lot. A lot stands in the way. And I see some of my friends and colleagues here. You know the challenges that are there. And remember, it's voluntary, so why do it, right? Time. It takes a lot of time to get ready. It takes a lot of time to do this. It takes staff away from other things, maybe even hiring new staff. There's an expense. There's an expense with preparing for accreditation. There's an expense with the fees for accreditation. It's not a free ride. There's the risk. They often tell the story in Michigan, which had state accreditation, of, well, there was this one local health director that got fired after they didn't pass accreditation. There's always a little risk with this. And then there's just stress on the staff. The public health system has been stressed a lot in the past few years, with economically, politically, socially, I mean, just things coming down, crises that they had to deal with. So what are the carrots? What are the incentives? And what are the sticks? In other words, how can you beat them into applying for accreditation? So again, a little background. Based on the 2010 profile of local health departments. Remember, this is before people applied, so these are always evolving numbers. But 50% of local health departments indicated an interest in accreditation. 21% said, oh, we'll go the first 2 years. Probably not that many going to do it, really. And it was clear that not everyone has these prerequisites in place. How many of you are from a local health department? Yeah, a lot of you. And I suspect that it is not necessarily true that you've had a continuing history of having a community health assessment, community health improvement plan, or a strategic plan at least every 5 years. At least that's what we found. So methodology, this is primarily what I'd call a qualitative study. We looked at previous work for sure, looked at data, particularly delving into the nature data, but it's mostly key informant interviews. Talked to 31 people, and they were people that are people who know what's up, from local, tribal, state health departments, state public health associations, and also academia. And all the partners, including Liza, were providing guidance and support and reviews, which is very appreciated. So my first challenge was I had to get a hold of this topic. How do you get a hold of this topic? And the only way it made sense to me, the only framework in which it made sense to me, was to define incentives as really providing one of two things. A clear benefit to the agency, whether tangible or intangible. Or just as important, if not more important, removing a barrier to the achievement of accreditation. And then it started to make sense. So benefits, well, most people that we talk to that are ready to apply, remember this is the really advanced group that's going for it. Excuse me, I missed one. It's pride in the organization. There's a lot of sense that we're good, and we want to show we're good. We want to be able to demonstrate it. And there are some tangible benefits. Oklahoma Department of Health, through the process, has already found benefits with increases in partner engagement and sector involvement. The list of barriers is long. Time required, we talked about that. Fees, cost, expertise, and dedicated staff. Even if you want to do it, do you have a staff that's the right staff to pull it off? prerequisites. Also, the standards have some requirements that not everybody has. In fact, most don't. Quality improvement plans, workforce plans. There may be lack of support by key leadership or your boards. So there are a lot of things standing in the way. Excuse me, both Laurie and I are dealing with something that's not contagious. Mine's allergies. Hers is past being, but we're both studying the story. State health agencies are key. Are any of you from a state health agency? Good. They really provide the, I think, opportunity to make this happen at both a local and state level. They can provide financial incentives, legal mandates, legal mandates particularly for the prerequisites, but in the case of Maine and Vermont, even for accreditation itself. Technical assistance, training, and this support to peer groups, that means that, say the locals, let's take Colorado for an example. If you have 5 local health departments that want to go ahead with accreditation, the state can help them get mobilized to help each other. And that we saw that happening in a couple of states, particularly Florida and Kentucky. CDC is absolutely key. The funding of FAB is key, the funding of the partner organizations to provide technical assistance and training, the direct funding through NIFE, state and local health departments, tribal as well. Incorporation of public health improvement into grants is an opportunity. Promotion of accreditation is an opportunity. And something that I call institutionalizing public health system improvement concepts to CDC. We all know CDC is siloed, just like our local health departments are siloed, just like our state health departments are siloed. But the concept of making sure that the entire organization supports public health system improvement is really important. We can't say enough about what Robert Wood Johnson has done to put out incentives in so many ways, particularly with reduction of barriers in grant opportunities and so forth. Public health institutes are playing really important roles by helping local and state health departments. The National and State Public Health Associations, particularly the national associations, have really come into play with helping, particularly with reducing barriers. Academia can help, doesn't always, but can, and particularly through the training centers and Centers for Public Health Practice. An example that I think is kind of interesting, Michigan and their center their training center, public health training center, actually gave out grants of $10,000 each to a number of local health departments to help them prepare for accreditation. A unique example. You don't often hear about academia putting grant money out to locals. And, of course, the national policy organizations can play an important role, and probably that's yet to be tapped. Local to local, by that I mean locals helping each other in their pursuit of accreditation. And Kentucky is a great example of this. Florida is a great example of this. And that, again, becomes an incentive to go forward. They facilitate each other's meetings. They share templates. They do joint training. And they keep the state health agency focused, which is really good, too. Other observations. The advantage of being a consultant is you're sort of a hired gun, but you don't really work for anybody, so you can kind of tweak people once in a while. As I looked at the standards for accreditation, I didn't think the Public Health Accreditation Board had strong enough language in its standards and measures for the role of the state health agency in supporting system improvement. Others might have a different opinion. I think it could be strengthened. Another observation is that how you help, whether it's, which level is helping which, but the most clear example is a state health agency helping locals. You really have to match the motivation of the agency that you're trying to help with the right incentive. So these, These are what I classified as just by my terminology. Highly motivated, the willing, and the less motivated. That's a kind way to say, over my dead body. So, and looking at the role of the state health agency, how can they best support accreditation, and why should they? Well, I think it's their job. That's that. But anyway. So, the statewide obligation to support the public health system, and that's true in a centralized state as well as a decentralized state. It's just a different role, with that central office versus district office versus state with local. There's some responsibilities in those measures related to the state health agency should help the locals with health data profiles and support that. It should align state and local priorities, but it's pretty weak. And the relationships we have to remember between state and local health agencies, particularly for decentralized states, varies over time. So I come from a decentralized state. Sometimes the locals get along with the state. Sometimes you can't wait for the leadership to leave and move on to the next one. And that just is course of events. I've watched that in states all around the country. It's just the way it works. So it's not always constant. So if you're a state wanting to support the locals, you really need to ask some questions. How knowledgeable is this particular agency, the public health and community leaders, about accreditation? What is the staff level of awareness? What are the most meaningful incentives for this local health department at this particular point in time? What is the level of current effort toward being ready for accreditation? Have they started? Are they on the way, or have they not even thought about it? And then, for this particular health department, what are the barriers that they're facing? And then you can really tailor it to the highly motivated. Maybe they need some technical assistance. Maybe they need a little support. The willing, maybe they are more in that peer group and in really tapping into the expertise of the highly motivated. And the less motivated are really down into the informational level of related to accreditation. NIFI is huge. When I talked to these 31 folks across the country, it was very, very important. And my data is a little bit old. It's over 2 years. I used what was available publicly at the time. It has reinforced the role of the state health agency by funding the performance improvement managers. It's been brilliant. I mean, it was really the right thing to do, providing resources for training, technical assistance, direct financial support, and enhanced collaboration. Legal mandates for prerequisites and accreditation, I think, are very important. I did a related study a year before with a legal team. We had a legal team from the University of Denver's Law School related to what are the legal mandates for accreditation, or for the prerequisites for accreditation. And many states have some kind of a requirement that either locals or state do either health assessments, community health improvement plans, and even strategic plans. That's also there. And we looked beyond the law. We looked at we looked at regulations. We looked at executive orders. We looked at legislative resolutions. We even looked at contracts that may go from the state to the locals. And in Florida, a great example is the personnel contract with the head of their districts, or they're actually called county health departments now, requiring the role in that contract, the role of the leadership to be working on these kinds of endeavors. So there are a number of legal mandates, and they're important. And there's a whole study on that if you're interested with a database that will give you examples. Not examples, it gives you the whole inventory. The grant programs are very important, funded by CDC and RWJF, and the really active support for accreditation by national associations, including APHA, has been very, very key. So these are some of the ways that states support local health departments with incentives, and some of these just some examples. Washington State is looking at really matching the national standards with their own state standards, and they add a few. But they really are probably the most far ahead of matching standards, state and national. One that hasn't been done yet but is under discussion by some states is that FAB accreditation could count for state accreditation. It's a potential incentive. A number of states have given direct financial support for accreditation preparation. Montana, North Carolina, New York are examples. Training and assistance, well, these 31 states are doing that, maybe more. And leading by example was really important to the locals in Arizona. I thought that was interesting. Things that could be done that I don't think are necessarily being done yet would be direct support for paying for accreditation fees. I do think that some of the state and local foundations could be tapped to help with that. Linking state funding to prerequisites, that's Illinois. Funding of accreditation coordinators, that's Oklahoma. Building strong relationships, again, that's Arizona. And then what I call fear, trepidation, and conditional funding. It's not being done, but everybody expects it. everybody expects it. If you're part of the conversation just casually, you know, when not to be recorded, with local health directors, what I hear is it's inevitable, right? We're going to have to do it. We can't compete. And that's, frankly, a very important incentive. That's one they call the stick. Use of law and regulations, we talked about that. 24 states have some kind of a mandate. And data assistance, most do. I mean, I put some examples that I think do it very well, but I think that most states actually do help the locals with their data for their assessments, et cetera. How CDC can incentivize the states and what the field says. In other words, what folks say when I talk to them about that. Streamlining the processes for accredited agencies, reducing the reporting requirement for accredited agencies, providing extra credit for applications for funding. In other words, that carrot. Providing increased flexibility in the use of programmatic funds, those silos, make them more flexible. Spread the cost of accreditation, which CDC has done. They've said that's okay. Very important. Provide the messaging to grantees. Reinforce the role of the performance improvement managers. Require states, well, this is my language here, require states to support local jurisdictions with federal grant funding. Provide information and share success stories. I think CDC is a fabulous bully pulpit and really has a nice opportunity to continue to play that role. This is a tough one because it's out of their control. Maintain predictable funding for accreditation. You know, the federal budget, doesn't matter what program you're in, you know, these days you just don't know from one year to the next. They've done a pretty good job with having consistent funding, and I know that's a challenge. Targeted funding. And I use the example of ASPH. HRSA has grants only available to accredited schools of public health. Down the road, will CDC, will HRSA decide that they will have funding, will some of the foundations decide they will have funding pockets of money, pools of money, that are available only to accredited health departments? It's a big question. There are, of course, other players, the public health institutes, we mentioned those, academia, state affiliates, private foundations, and this is my contact information. I'm always happy to give you more. And the report is available, and it includes also simple inventories of lists of incentives. So, for instance, if you're at the state level and you want a list, we have that as part of this report. So, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.